Hello and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens all around New York. And this time of year, we also plant bulbs. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Our show broadcasts from the Heritage Radio Network from two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and is located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. Our sponsor today is Acme Smoked Fish, located in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Acme has been a mainstay in New York's culinary landscape for over 55 years. Using old-world recipes, Acme produces the finest smoked salmon, whitefish, and sable that discerning palates demand. For information on where to find Acme, Blue Hill Bay, or Ruby Bay products, visit www.acmesmokedfish.com. So Alice and I, we on our show bring the culture to horticulture, don't we, Alice?
Yes, we try.
And we are thinking about spring 2011. That's right, because even though they bloom in the spring, you have to plant them in the fall. So you have to plan. And the bulbs we're going to talk about today are things like the daffodils, the hyacinths, the crocus. So you have to buy them now, and you have to plant them before frost wherever you're area is. So the spring color that you expect, that you see, that you see at Easter time, requires 6 months preparation, and not in April when some of our clients wake up and want color from the dreary winter, but now in October and in November when most of the world thinks gardening is over. But it's not over.
We know. Oh. Us gardeners know.
It's just the beginning. In fact, if you look at trees now this winter, you'll start seeing the new buds for spring already kind of swelling. And it's right. Really, really cool. So
this is when your knees are wet and your hands get dirty.
And our gardeners hate us.
And you're cold and cranky because you're planting bulbs.
And it's wet and you have to dig each hole.
One at a time.
One at a time.
For that glorious, glorious display,
yes,
come April.
Exactly. So you have to be patient. And so today we thought we'd give a little primer on bulbs, a little bit of history, a little how-to of some of our favorites for spring color. So let's start with the daffodil, Alice.
The daffodil. These are those sturdy, bright, tall friends that are so perky when they first bloom. They originate from Spain and Portugal. They were brought to Britain by the Romans, who thought actually that the sap had healing powers. Now we know that it's that sap that causes allergy and irritation, actually.
And the bulb is very poisonous, actually.
It certainly is. That's why it's great, because squirrels seem to leave the daffodils alone, as opposed to the tulips that they find so delicious. Narcissus. You can't talk about daffodils without talking about Narcissus, which is named after the handsome young Greek man. And remember that nymph Echo, who was in love with Narcissus, but when Narcissus broke off the relationship with Echo, she hid in a cave and she died of heartbreak. Narcissus later saw himself in a pool of water, and being so taken with his beauty and himself, he couldn't stop staring at himself, he fell into the water and drowned. So the flower is actually said to be his reflection. There's a poem that I wanted to read by William Wordsworth, and it reads like this. It's all about daffodils. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high air, valves and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in a sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not be but gay. In such a jocund company, I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft, when on my couch I lie in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude, and then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils.
You can't be depressed and see a host of daffodils.
No.
It's really a cheerful sight.
And you know? I love that he references the bay, as in Narcissus, the story, you know,
yes,
the Greek story. So
Let's talk some more about some other Greeks.
Sure. Let's talk about Hyacinth.
Bouquet residents.
Yeah. Who came, Hyacinth came to Europe from Turkey. In 1573, a German doctor collected samples of these flowers in Turkey. And by the late 1700s, more than 2,000 cultivars were available and were popular. So Hyacinth, again from Greek mythology, was a young boy named Hyacinth. He was killed when a discus hit him in the head as he was playing a game. So the story is that a flower sprang from his head as he lay dying in the arms of Apollo. Apollo was said to be wailing and grieving and crying, and the flower that sprung from his head actually has a pattern of the pattern on the floral petal is an A shape, which indicates Apollo and the sign of his grief.
These Greeks are very obsessed with bad behaving bad boys. Self-indulgent. Oh, there's a flower. Someone must have behaved badly.
Oh, bulbs.
Hyacinth, come here.
Oh, bulbs.
Now, well, when you buy a hyacinth bulb, you're going to think about that. And it's not just going to be a dry, brown, shriveled thing, but you're going to think about some, you know, distracted discus player, aren't you?
Well, let's talk about some other bad behavior. And let's talk about crocus.
Yes. Now, I know Alice turned me on to crocus because I didn't like them for a very long time. But she, being one of her favorite bulbs, she encouraged me to plant them. And I'm so glad that, you know, she's turned me onto them, and I now have them in my garden, and we plant them for a lot of people.
Those little purple and yellow.
Yeah, and they come out very early, very, very early in the year, March, sometimes even in February if it's warm. And this flower is also, thanks to the Greeks, a symbol of love. It was the Greek gods Zeus and Hera, who loved each other so passionately that wherever they loved and made love, these flowers burst wide open. So every time I see them tucked into nooks and crannies of gardens, under shrubs and trees, I think, wow, there too. I love that thought. So now that's some interesting behavior.
Active behavior. Active underneath behavior. The shrubs, right?
Yeah. It's very nice.
Those Greeks were malleable.
Yeah. They can turn any story into something raunchy, I guess.
But they're having sex everywhere.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
So, well, the crocus were brought to Europe, actually England from France, by someone by the name of Jean Robin, the director of gardens in Paris, and then they emigrated to the U.S. on ships with settlers who brought them sort of as a prize across the ocean. So can you imagine moving to a new country and thinking, I've got to bring these crocus bulbs with me? Those are some serious gardens.
That is the last thing I would be thinking of, you know? I'd be worried about disease, and these people are worried about,
and the food. Well, they wanted to bring beauty with them, you know? And actually, bulbs are very portable, and reliable, generally, sort of ways to store plant energy, you know?
Right.
Now, what I think of, when people think bulbs, and obviously the people from Holland think bulbs, they think tulip, right?
Tulips.
And in fact, this is a really interesting story. And Anna Pavord's book, Tulipomania, which is a book that I highly recommend and that you should read. It's really the first story, an early story of speculation. And, you know, what we thought, we had a mortgage crisis. Wait until you read that book and you hear about how crazed people got about tulips and how much money they would spend and what they would mortgage to get one.
Yeah, this is a completely fantastic story.
So we're going to take a little bit of a break. Or is it too early, Alice?
I think it's a little early.
Okay.
Keep talking.
All right, I'll keep talking. So basically, the tulip was introduced into Europe at the end of the 16th century from Central Asia. Again, I think it's Kazakhstan or Afghanistan or, you know.
One of the stands.
Well, the stands. The Turks had them, and they were part of the, you know, the Ottoman Empire. They had them, and only the, you know, the very rich and the very powerful could enjoy them. And the Turks kind of, you know, hid them from the Europeans and didn't want to share these tulip bulbs. But once, I think
it became a real status symbol.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had a tulip, you were like, you know, the dude on the block.
Yeah. And I think it was, Alice, wasn't it the one of the sort of folks, the word is escaping me, but like a politician who was visiting Turkey and kind of stole some and yes. brought them to Holland. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it started this craze, and it also started a very prosperous time in the Netherlands when they were doing really well. Their navy was very powerful. They were exploring all parts of the world, and they were looking for exotic products. So for the rich and the famous, the tulip was this amazing status symbol, and the popularity of the tulip soared, and soon the demand like skyrocketed. In fact, in 1636, people started using the tulip to speculate with, indebting themselves to buy bulbs at very high prices and then selling them for even higher ones. Now, this is astounding to me because we're not talking about gold or diamonds. This is a perishable product, you know, at a time when they didn't really have a good sense of the science of it and how they worked, you know?
Right. Prices for tulips went as high as the prices of the big houses along the canals in Amsterdam.
Yeah. So nowadays, one floor in such a house already costs more than 1 million guilders, you know?
Right.
So they were speculating for so long. Finally, they had a reversal of their fortune, which was reached in February 3rd, 1637. When, for the first time, a collection of very exclusive tulips remained unsold. Other cases followed, and the speculative bubble was quickly pierced, and that was the end of that. So we can relate to that now, can't we, Alice?
Yeah.
You know, you don't know
there's
when it's going
to... There's a lot of traders feeling the same way.
Yeah, I mean, people sold, like, all of their hogs, all of their animals, whatever crops they promised, you know, whatever... income they were going to have from their crops. They promised everything just for a few tulip bulbs, you know? And of course, if you see the paintings of the period, tulips are very often featured prominently.
Yeah, in botanical artwork, sure.
And now, many bulb flowers now all develop, produce, and exported from Holland. So they're native from far-flung corners of the earth, but Holland has become, because of that time period, Holland has become... Even though the
kind of epicenter.
That epicenter. And there still is a market for bulbs and for flowers. I think we talked about that in one of our early shows in the spring in Amsterdam and in other places in Holland. There is a an actual market, you mm-hmm. know, where people will sort of an auction of the bulbs and the flowers so that people will pay, you know, like market price for it.
But the wild forms of these bulbs generally look kind of nothing like these cultivated bulbs
No.
that the Dutch hybridizers have created.
No, they're really amazing. I've planted a few species tulips. They're very small,
mm-hmm.
very delicate. They look nothing like that. And they've really, what I like about tulips is you can find them in every color of the rainbow, you know, mm-hmm. from pure white to almost black.
Almost black,
so
right.
you can really get creative with them and use them. They're applicable in just about any kind of garden situation, you know. I kind of think of them as disposable, not like the Dutch.
Right.
now that the prices of them have come down considerably, so it's worth it to try, you know, some wild ones if you happen, some species tulips. You just have to make sure that they're not wild collected, that they're actually cultivated, you mm-hmm. know, and not taken from the wild, because there's a lot of areas where they're kind of in danger of being extinct.
Right. Yeah.
So bulbs in general, well, we kind of were throwing around this word bulb, but it refers to the sort of storage structure, and that's that fleshy mass that lives underground. And it stores its whole complete life cycle in this underground structure, all its nutrient reserves. In fact, if you cut a tulip bulb in half, you can see a miniature version of the flower, everything, the stem, the leaves, in miniature.
Yeah, you can see generations, which I find fascinating with the bulb.
Yeah, it's really, really great.
It really is the, you know, it brings life to the term hope.
Yeah, because when you look at this brown, shriveled thing with this, like, dry husk over it, you think, how could this be a flower, yeah. you know?
Hope really does spring eternal.
Yeah, so, you know, they have this, like, period of growth and flowering, then this, like, period of dormancy that begins to store energy again in the fall. That's why we plant them in the fall, and that's why they usually don't do well in southern climates, because they need that cold period, they need mm-hmm. that dormancy. So, it's an amazing kind of thing when you cut it open. It's kind of like this ultrasound, but for real, you can see them growing, and it's like this whole new world of beauty. So we're going to take a little bit of a break now. This is the real break, and listen to some music. And when Alice and I come back, we're going to talk about how and when to plant them.
Where will we all be? Come tiptoe tulips with me. Oh, tiptoe by the garden, by the garden of the willow tree. Come tiptoe through the tulips with me. Lady, in flowers we'll stray, we'll keep the shower.
Welcome back. We dig plants on Heritage Radio Network. That was Tiptoe Through the Tulips by Tiny Tim. And
I'm so glad we got to use that song, Alice.
I don't know. Tiny Tim and tulips, you can't really talk about bulbs without imagining big Tiny Tim.
Tim.
tipping around. So let's talk for a little bit about how and when to plant tulips
and also and as bulbs. You're buying them, like what to look for. That's really important.
Yeah.
So they're coming from Holland, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So they've been dug in the summertime and they've been cleaned up and put in cold storage mm-hmm. until they're ready to sell. So they usually hit the markets in September. And it's important that you not buy them too early before you plant them, because unless you have a place to keep them at like 45, 50 degrees, they're going to kind of dry up. And, by the time you plant them, they could not be in great shape.
Right.
So one of the things that we look for is, in the case of the tulip, let's use that as an example. It has this brown covering over it called the tunic. And it's what protects the softer part of the bulb from disease and from getting bruised and damaged. Because as we said earlier, the entire thing, the stem, the leaves, the flowers are all in there. So if it gets banged up or diseased or damaged in some way, you're compromising what the flower and or the overall plant will look like.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to look for firm bulbs.
Did you just say firm bulbs?
I did. Not shriveled, all right? Put them in the palm of your hand and feel them. They should be firm.
You're killing me.
And then they should have a tunic. The brown husk should be, covering it, it's okay if you see one or two in the bag that don't have it. That's all right. But you want to make sure they don't have any, mold on it or those mm-hmm. blue spots or any sign of, sickness, mm-hmm. because that could also infect the rest of your tulips and bulbs and also not produce good flowers. So buy them just a week or two or maybe three
before
you're going to plant, and keep them in a cool, dry place. Now, mm-hmm. as Alice mentioned, squirrels love tulips. If you leave them, in a place where animals can get to them, they will devour
them. They're going to be gone.
Yeah.
In fact, we plant our tulips and bulbs late here in New York for specifically that reason, because if you plant them early, even though by the clock it's okay to put them in October, November, that's still like prime warm weather. That means like squirrel hunting,
That's right. I hate squirrels.
They are looking for their food. So if you spend however much money and you stick it in the ground with anticipation and hope, it's going to be chewed up and scattered all over your yard and it's very, very disappointing.
It is. I think a squirrel once was trailing me after I was planting.
Yeah.
I dug all these holes and I put all my tulips
on
in.
You.
And then it was nice and loose, the soil, so he could dig. He's better digging than I am, and he dug up every one of my tulips. So
he sees you as a meal ticket.
Oh yeah. Thanks. Sucker.
So meanwhile you've just spent $1,000
feeding
in bulbs.
Squirrels.
Feeding squirrels, right? So we put them in late
November, because
early December.
Yeah,
definitely the ground has suffered through a few frosts by the time we put our bulbs in, because we're really with the hope when we plant that it's going to freeze hard, and those squirrels are going to be like,
good luck trying to dig through that.
Dixie. looking for their nuts.
Go get a chestnut.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's important. Another thing to deter squirrels and other furry unwanted pests in the garden is to plant them deep. And it'll tell you on the package how deep to plant bulbs. And that's very important.
It says 6 to 8, but we usually go 8 to 10.
Yeah.
12.
Yeah. And if you have a lot to plant, I was kidding before about having to dig each hole, but if you do have a lot to plant, you can dig a trench mm-hmm. nice and deep. That'll be easier for you with a big spade, and then place them. And it's also really important not to crowd them. I think a lot of people dig a hole, dump them in, and you have to space them, because otherwise they won't do well. They won't produce really good flowers or foliage if they're right next to each other.
And generally, try and plant them with the tip up. However, they will right themselves mm-hmm. if you do get impatient and dump them into a hole, which I've, been known to do.
When it's snowing and you're planting, you will stuff things down.
Yeah, but they do right themselves, mm-hmm. Which is another miraculous trait about bulbs. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that we always suggest when we're planting our bulbs is plant them en masse, which means don't plant them like little soldiers in a row.
That looks terrible.
So that they look silly when they come up. They look better when they look natural. So that means mm-hmm. odd numbers, 3s, 5s, 7s, 11s, 9s. And plant them in kind of an organic shape, maybe a kidney shape or whatever you do, just don't plant them in a row because they look...
That looks silly. And a lot of people do that. And Alice and I, being the plant and design snobs that we are, we don't do a technicolor display. You're not making a botanic garden.
No, one color at a time. Yeah. You don't want to scare people. You don't want to have them put on sunglasses to look at your at your floral display.
I mean, there are some that maybe two colors that complement each other. Mm-hmm. And really look at the bloom times. There's early, mid, and late season tulips. So think about what other things are blooming in your garden. If you have some like early perennials that you think would look nice with it, put the early tulips in. If you
complementary colors.
Exactly. And what's great about tulips mixed in with perennials is that, of course, after the flower is done, the foliage starts looking ugly. It's mm-hmm. not a pretty, plant without a flower on it. So the perennials and other ground covers kind of camouflage the ugly foliage that's dying, mm-hmm. Now, as I said before, Alice and I think of tulips as kind of disposable. For our clients' purposes, because we have to have a regular and reliable display every year, we treat the tulips as disposable. We plant them in the fall. After they come up in the spring and they look bad, we rip out everything, not just the leaves, but the bulb too, because they do not come up very reliably. One might not flower, one might, have a really small or weak flower. So we rip them out, throw them out, and put new ones. We don't think of tulips as perennials in our case.
However, we do think of daffodils as
yes,
perennial.
That's a whole other thing.
So daffodils are one investment is going to give you payback for years. Mm-hmm. And they naturalize and they make bulblets under mm-hmm. the ground, mm-hmm. and then they just keep producing. Now, of course, that's going to have to be replaced every probably 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. They don't go on forever.
And they have to be divided, like other perennials that get aggressive. So if you plant them spaced out, like we suggested, they won't crowd one another, and you won't have to divide them as quickly. It'll, mm-hmm. It's one individual plant. If you give it more room, it has more room to get water and nutrients, and it'll produce better flowers. And there's nothing, as Alice was reading in the poem, there's nothing more beautiful than Narcissus in the spring. It's like, right. It's a quintessential flower of spring. So those bulbs look really, really different from tulips. They definitely have like a sort of longer neck, and some are
fragrant.
Fragrant, and they're really worth planting, the fragrant ones.
Picotee is one of our favorites. But I also really love the yellow and orange combination within one flower.
Those are hot.
Those are really, really beautiful.
I like Narcissus poeticus, which is the poet's daffodil. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it's very delicate. It's white with just like a little orange eye. And to me, there's nothing sweeter than that. It's a tidy little narcissus. Its foliage is small and kind of gray-green. And it looks really beautiful in the spring with other things, like darker colored flowers, because it's so... it's so delicate, mm-hmm. you know?
It's sweet.
Yeah. And then we were talking about the crocus. Now, the crocus, being that they're very, very small bulbs, when you buy them, you'll see that they're like the size of a dime, you mm-hmm. know, very, very tiny. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to tell with those small bulbs which end is up, you know? So really look at it closely. You'll see that the bottom often has like an indentation that goes downward where the roots grow from. And then the top is more pointed. And it usually has like just a little bit of a point to it. And that's the side that has to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And as a general rule of thumb for these bulbs, if you don't want to stand out there with a ruler, if you plant the bulbs two or three times their height in depth. So let's say the narcissus bulb is 3 inches high, plant it 6 inches deep and you should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you plant them too shallow, besides the animals getting at them, they can't... you know, they can't root very well.
They can't nestle themselves in.
Yeah, right. So it's better to plant them a little bit deeper. And it's important also to note that they don't like wet, boggy soils at all.
Right.
If you think about where they're native to, it's rocky, it's limey, it's very
dry,
well-draining. So you don't want to put them like in a bog garden, you know, or in a place where the soil is very clay-like. You have to
Or planters.
Yeah.
I find they don't do very well.
They never do well in planters. They just always seem to rot, you know. They just get too much water.
I try every year and I get the same stumpy little green humps of foliage.
It's better to just, if you have a container garden, buy the potted ones in the spring and put them in, and no one will know, no one will be the wiser. No one will know that you didn't plant them in October and November and you grew them on and they sprouted. No one will know.
That's the Disneyland effect that some of us have to do, because all we have are planter boxes.
Yeah.
But if you're lucky enough to have a yard, then you're doing your work in October.
And also what's nice, don't just think of them in garden borders or in beds, but narcissus do really beautiful in lawns. If you have a lawn, you can cut a small patch of the sod or the lawn panel, flip it back, you know, cut out like a C shape and flip it back, and then put the bulbs in there, and then they'll push through the lawn. You can put the lawn right back over it. And
like a carpet.
Yeah, and they'll push through, and they'll be beautiful. And usually they're blooming before you have to really start cutting the lawn that much. So, you know, you mow over them or you mow around them, and they are really nice in big clumps in meadows or in places where you have big open space. They like the sun, you know?
Yeah, one of my favorite kind of visions, happy place in my head is a dogwood with muscari planted underneath.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about muscari. Muscari are a grape hyacinth, they're mm-hmm. called. That's the common name. They're also very reliable. And what's great about them, and that I find interesting, is that they make foliage in the fall. So let's say you plant them one fall, and then they bloom in the spring. And then the next fall, you'll know that they're there because they made these cute little green leaves poking out. So you know that those muscari are what we call perennializing. They're rooting themselves. They're making sort of a permanent place for themselves in the garden. And it's a great place. I mean, bulbs, they're invisible after you cut the leaves, so you can't remember where you planted them. So it's really important that you make note in your garden notebook or put like a tag or something in the garden, because it's very easy as you're digging around, as I have, to uproot them,
right,
you know, and disturb them.
And when that happens, just stick them back in and mm-hmm. you'll get a little surprise.
Yeah. Or you can stick, you know, you can put your spade in and split it in half like I do a lot of times. And we didn't even get into the more uncommon ones like alliums, and we might have to do a show on summer bulbs maybe, Alice.
Yeah, I think we should. We wanted to just kind of concentrate, I think, with on the fall planted spring blooming bulbs.
Yeah.
But there's a whole world of all kinds of dahlias and iris and, you know, you name it. There's a ton of more bulb discussion that we could have.
Yeah, we'll do that in the spring when those are generally available, and people and think about summer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, right now we have to wrap up our spring bulb show. Thanks for listening. We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. If you've missed any part of this show, you can listen to it on the website archive, heritageradionetwork.com, or on iTunes podcast. Thanks to Jack Inslee for producing and Nat Wiener for engineering. Thanks to Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, and to our sponsor, Acme Fish. And we look forward to seeing you next week in the garden. Happy gardening.
Happy gardening.